Hawker's Playhouse.
Indeed, Mr. Fane, you might have waited until I bade you enter.
The fact is, hearing voices, I had less compunction in breaking in on you than I would otherwise have had.
Is it not probable, sir, that I chatter to myself while I'm calculating my figures?
Unlocked.
And locked.
You're evading the point, Mrs. Jessman. Is there anyone concealed in here?
Well, was someone concealed there, or did pretty Mrs. Jessman chatter and laugh to herself while she calculated her figures? The answer to these questions, and there is an answer, is not for us to tell. Instead, we go back in time to the graceful and charming England of George III. Imagine, if you will, a country inn located in the county of Cumberland in the last part of the 18th century. As Author's Playhouse presents the late Sir Arthur Wing Pinero's strange tale of The Widow of Wasdale Head.
Good, my dear fellow, you don't drink. Come, drink up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dick. Welcome to Wasdale Head.
Thank you, Ned. Your health. Well, Ned Tubal.
Aye. It is like to be worse at a fore morn. There'll be sleet, lower's been fleeting this sleet, depend on it. Heaven send the chimney stacks to hoard out.
Amen to that.
What's that? The sign of a house. It hangs on a post outside the inn. Creeps like that in the wind for hours.
That is ghostly sound.
Be there anything else I could do for you, Sir John?
No, Tubal, thank you, no.
Very well, sir.
At last. But that he would never leave. And now, my dear Ned, let me inform you why I have intruded on you in this manner.
It's no intrusion, Jack. To be candid, I've already guessed the object of your visit.
Indeed. Well, then, that being the case...
Oh, confound you, Jack. You don't suppose I attribute your sudden unlooked-for appearance to mere inclination for gossip over a bottle? You, of all men, would never quit town at this time of year without an urgent reason.
Since you phrase it that way...
You were sent here by my family.
They're vastly concerned at your absence.
In the name of patience, why? Their letters plague me to death, Jack.
Well, your visit here with Sir Roger Boltwood ended 2 months ago.
True, it did. But I became smitten with the beauty of the district. It's a lovely locality, in spite of flood and tempest.
Oh, I keep forgetting you were a poet.
Oh, bosh, don't roast me for my follies.
My dear boy, if our follies ceased with the scribbling of verses, we should be warranted in esteeming ourselves wise. So it is solely the beauty of the district that detains you, eh, Ned?
Well, yes.
And when I, too, have explored this enchanting neighborhood, shall we travel home together, Ned?
No, Jack. I can't leave here until...
Secure the doors of the buttery, Tubal, since they that are banging.
I'm...
As I live, what a beautiful woman.
I'm sorry I was not by to receive you today, Sir John. Late as it was, I was at my farm in Burnford, where I was tending some sick beef. I hear you've ridden from Alderson today, which is a weary road.
Oh, yes, I...
this is my friend, Sir John Humphrey, Mrs. Devon.
I know. I saw Sir John once when I was a child, driving his curricle in Hyde Park. He did make such a fine show.
Oh, madam, I must be honored.
I'm sure your friend is happy to see you here, Sir John. Wasdale Head is but a stern and solitary spot at all times, and March our dreariest month.
Suffer me to say, madam, that meeting you has increased my happiness in no inconsiderable degree.
I fear Sir John does not know who or what I am. Please enlighten him, Mr. Fane.
Mrs. Jessman is mistress of this inn, Jack, and the widow of Mr. Henry Jessman of Eglemont.
A widow, ma'am? Oh, I'm sorry.
2 years a widow, and a humble taverner and farmer, and at your service. I've brought you both a bowl of punch. It is of my own mixing, Sir John, and I beg your indulgence for the widow's offering.
Ned, ma'am, I swear you shall join us. Ned, a third glass.
Oh, mercy, Sir John.
I insist on my knees.
Why, Sir John...
For you, ma'am.
Oh, thank you.
And you, Ned?
Thank you.
There. Come now, bumpers. Ah, that's not fair, Mrs. Jessman. Bumpers. There now. Upon my soul, tis delicious. Permit me to compliment you on your skill, ma'am.
Oh, the credit is none of mine, Sir John. It was my dear Harry that taught me.
Your late husband. A toast. I call a toast then. Ned, Mrs. Desmond, I give you...
The king.
Certainly, my lord. Certainly. His most gracious majesty, King George.
The king.
God bless him. Another.
Nay, spare me.
Ned, to the Lady of Wasden.
The Lady of Wasden.
Oh, the widow thanks you, gentlemen, for your amiability. And with a full heart. And now, if you'll excuse me, I'll go to your bedchambers and see that your beds are properly prepared.
Allow me to light you, ma'am.
Oh, it is not necessary, Sir John. Allow me to hand you the corridor.
As I live, an adorable creature.
Thank you, Ned.
Yes, sir?
You were right. Wasden is the most beautiful district in the kingdom. Charming, a divinity, prodigious. How the devil did you...
Oh, it is a simple story, Jack. Betty, Mrs. Desmond, eloped with Henry Desmond to establish this tavern with what remained of his squandered inheritance.
Since she has been 2 years a widow, he must have carried her to church in a go-cart.
They were only married a month. Riding home from a hunt, he was thrown and mortally hurt. He breathed just long enough to shoot his poor mare, who had broken her leg, and then he laid his head upon her warm ribs and stirred no more.
Leaving this delicately bred young lady to brute punch and till the soil for her subsistence.
And that's the wonder of it. Her aptitude is amazing. Not a farmer in Cumberland can match her knowledge of crops and cattle. I've seen the oldest and wisest of them approach her hat in hand to ask her counsel in a difficulty. And her reply is always the same.
The same?
Come back to me, she will say, as soon as you please after Friday. And you shall have my advice.
Friday?
Yes. Every Friday night she sits here in this room. When the household is a bed, then makes up her book.
Oh, the wind sings. It has a voice in it, positively. Her parlor, eh?
Yes. Every Friday night at the stroke of 10, I leave her here preparing for her work. And today...
I have thought of that. Today is Friday.
And it's close on 10 now.
I, for one, am mightily relieved, Ned. Just as I suspected. Entangled in a petticoat. Have you declared yourself yet?
No.
Why, man, what ails you?
There's a mystery in this house.
A mystery, eh?
Yes, and I lack the courage to unravel it.
Explain, Ned.
I leave Betty here alone every Friday night. But heaven forgive me for doubting her. I fear she doesn't remain alone.
The devil, you say?
Unless she's capable of talking to herself. Her vigil is no solitary one.
Talking to herself? Who would have thought it of her? The jades are all of a pattern. Talking to herself? What?
During my second week here, I retired when suddenly I remembered that I had left a letter in here on the desk. I came to fetch it and was standing by the door, wavering whether I should rest.
Yes.
Then I heard the low muttering of a voice or voices. I could swear a man was talking.
Every Friday night, Ned?
Yes, and sometimes I've heard a soft wailful note. Is it from an instrument?
A signal.
That the thought just came to me.
Look, an instrument such as this would produce the sound I heard.
Hear this.
A hunting horn.
But it's dull for want of use.
Tis you that are dull. Look if it's bright at the mouth.
Yes. The metal here shines like a guinea.
Only 5-4. That is not the only mouth pressed by those lips of hers. It's plain, Ned, that the wee widow's weekly vigil is but a ruse for entertaining her amorette at her ease, the troll.
But, Jack, I...
Away with your scruples. We leave the pretty witch to her pretense. That you shall return and walk boldly in.
By what right, Jack?
You imagine she isn't aware that you are honestly in love with her? There's reason sufficient for you. I leave my pistols here under my cloak should you chance to need them.
Oh, Jack, it's impossible that she should be frail. She has the look and bearing of an angel. Her eyes, Jack, her eyes...
They are brilliant.
They resemble the blue of a summer morning ever mystery dispelled. Her voice...
Musical, I admit.
Her voice is the quality of a harp in it when its strings are half muffled. Mark me, Jack, if I find her no better than she should be, I'll never trust woman again.
Oh, Ned.
Never, never.
Ned, I protest. You recall Mr. Garrick to me as the blackamoor in Shakespeare's play.
Jack, I mean what I say.
When that great little man, Mr. Garrick, quits the stage, you shall finish place, my dear Ned. I vow you shall.
Mr. Cummings.
Make sure the shutters are tight, Jubal.
Aye, mistress.
It's way past 10 o'clock. You've told Sir John, Mr. Fane?
He has indeed. And to say the truth, I shall not be sorry to find myself in a soft bed and between a pair of sweet-smelling sheets at an earlier hour than is customable with me.
Oh, you must dream you're in London, Sir John, card-playing with some choice cronies.
Nay, ma'am, my dream shall be of a far more interesting sort, I promise you.
Good night, Sir John. Good night, Mr. Fane.
Good night.
So long, Ned. Good night, ma'am.
Be there out else I can do for him?
No, thank you, Jubal. Are the maids in their beds?
Aye, and David's asleep, I reckon, the hussies. Good night, mistress.
Good night, Jubal. Ah, at last, everyone in bed. Thought they'd never retire. And now, dear hell, come to me. There go the slates of the old lean-to in the stable yard. It's a terrible night. I wonder if he'll come.
Now, had I ever failed to come when you called me back from the grave by blowing the horn?
It's a terrible night for you to be abroad, Hal. I'd almost hoped you wouldn't obey my call.
There you go again, Maggie. Oh, how often I've told you all weather's one to a ghost. Now then, sit with you, and let's go to work. And, Hockey, if these winds continue to blow, thou'd best clear the yew flock off the fells into the lowlands. You hear?
I hear, my dear Hal.
Is there aught else amiss here or at the farm?
Four of the shorthorn bullocks at Burnswood are lame from Kybe. What am I to do for them?
Kybe? What? Why, I gave thee a remedy for Kybe a year since.
I know you did, Hal, but I failed to notice.
Oh, I'm sorely afeard you've no head, Betty. Thou'rt but a heedless, gay-hearted wench. What are you and the lads been doing for me?
Rubbing tallow fat betwixt the claws of the poor brute.
Tallow fat?
Yes.
Zounds, I wonder you ain't rubbed in some of the sweet pomade thou'd sent thee from London for thy ringlets.
Oh,
odd bobs, you may well grin. Twould vastly tickle me were I alive. come now, dip thee pen in the ink.
Kybe.
Anoint with blue vitriol and hog's lard.
Blue vitriol?
Williams at St. Bridget's will sell the blue vitriol. Mix the stuff half and half, and within a fortnight the beast will be sound footed.
Oh, thank you, dear Harry.
Now, what's the next item, Beth?
The next... Hal?
Eh?
Sit in my armchair yonder while I talk to thee, won't thou?
Certainly I will, child, if it afford thee any gratification. She's all the same to a ghost, whether he be sitting or lying or standing. There now. Do you fancy this posture?
I remember the image constantly. Oh, that I might still thy pipe and light it for thee at the candle, and slip the scarlet end of it into thy poor mouth as I used to do.
Nay, nay, Betty, that's talking sheer nonsense. Come. Come, there's no good whimpering. I get on with thy work.
Oh, help.
Why, Bet, what's wrong with thee now?
I'm an impostor. I despise myself for fobbing off these salesmen with belief that 'tis I who helps them in their difficulties.
Why, 'tis you that do it,
Harry.
I say 'tis so, and were I alive, I should be consumedly proud of you, Bet.
If only I could reveal that you visit me in this manner.
There, the folks for miles around. The inn and farms would be shunned, and thou'd be reduced to beggary.
I suppose so, Hal.
It is lucky I had a bent for farming as well as for dicing and cockfighting. But a husband and wife are one, and so I take it, or a widow and her husband's ghost. If she falls in love with another chap, there's logic for it. Gad, but that reminds me, Gad.
Oh, of what, dear Harry?
Of falling in love. The young gentleman that quartered himself under this roof 2 months ago is still here.
Mr. Edward Fane?
Aye, that's him. A handsome black young man in his own hair. I wager he finds no lack of diversion at Warsdale, or he'd not linger as he does. He's sweet on the lass, sweet to a certainty.
Hell, how can you?
I and thou be losing thy heart to him, if thou art not careful.
Harry.
And then I shall hear the blast of the horn no more on Friday night, in spite of all thy tears and protestations. And thou cast me aside and out of thy thoughts like a worn parasol.
Hell, as if I could ever be inconstant to thee, my first and last love. Shame on you, poor grisly thing that thou art, for thinking it of me.
Dang it, there you go again, Betty. Grisly. Oh, but just the same, when last I spied you both, he had a paper in his hand, and he seemed to be reading or reciting to me.
Ah, yes. He had the taste for writing poetry, and was reading one of his own compositions. That is the real reason he lingers at Walsdale, Harry. He declares the grandeur of the district elevates his mind.
What's his poetry like, lad? I warrant it's all love and dove and that sort of muck.
Nay, it is somewhat better than muck.
Eh? The piece he was reading, the, how was that style?
To Aminta, a lady dwelling in the country.
Ah, a lady dwelling in the country. Tis thee, of course.
Hell, there are hundreds of ladies that dwell in the country.
And he'd bear thee off to London, would he, to the haunts of men? Why, the...
Harry! I've a question to ask thee concerning the crooked field below Buckbarrow. Harry! Oh, hell, who could that be? What was... Who's there?
Did I? Forgive me, Mother.
Indeed, Mr. Fane, you might have waited till I bade you enter.
The fact is, hearing voices, I had less compunction in breaking in on you than I should otherwise have had.
Voices?
Yes. The sounds of laughing and talking.
I see. Is it not probable, sir, that I chatter to myself while I'm calculating my figures?
And laugh.
And laugh.
You're evading the point, Mrs. Desmond. Is there anyone concealed in here?
Concealed?
Nay, then he must have left the room as I entered it.
Mr. Fane, do you realize...
I swear I heard more than one voice, and that a man's. By heaven, you are deceiving me.
Deceiving you? Oh, what am I to you, or you to me, that I should deceive you, or enlighten you, on any matter that does not concern your abode at my inn, so that your bed is clean, your food wholesome, and my charges fair, and you acquit them promptly? What obligations, pray, are we under to each other?
I love you.
Love me, sir?
Yes. I've loved you from the first moment I saw you, and on the day I came to this inn and checked my bridle at the porch, you stood with your hands resting on my horse's shoulder and your eyes drooped before mine. I've loved you from that moment.
Loved me? Well, I've often been struck with the idea that you were exceedingly well disposed toward me, but...
Well disposed?
But until now, you've never spoken a word of love to me. You are full of courage tonight, at any rate.
I must admit to a display of jealousy. Mrs. Jelton, Betty... I set out for London tomorrow, carrying with me recollections that will remain with me until death. Recollections of the hours we've spent together in this room. Hours of bliss before I mistrusted thee. Hours of anguish when I endured the torment of the damned. I ask you only to remember that I would have crowned you with my honor and esteem, adored you and defended you and given you my heart to lean upon. But after tonight, after hearing those voices...
Edward, it is true, then, that you love me. Oh, my dear, I have been false and unworthy as you accused me. But 'tis my secret visitor that I'm false to and not to thee, my dearest mate.
No. What can I...
Don't put me from thee for this once. I have known of thy love for me from the beginning. And, oh, heaven, pardon me, my dear. I have loved that thou shouldst love me.
Betty, my love, my dearest.
I love you, Nick. And if you ride away tomorrow, glance up at my window before you leave.
That I shall not do. Now, where is this visitor?
Edward! Pixels! Why?
They are so down. He left them here lest I should encounter the wretch that have obtained such pernicious influence over me.
Oh, Edward, listen to
where
me.
Where is he hid?
No bullet can harm him. It would but whistle through him and strike the wall.
Are you out of your senses?
Am I? Thou shalt see. Unhook that horn from the wall and bring it to me.
The signal?
Yes, the signal. Here, let me have it, Ned. Watch closely, Ned.
Merciful power.
Drop the pistols. They will do no good.
A ghost.
A ghost?
Yes, miss. It is my husband's spirit. My grief called it to me in the young days of my bereavement. And it has visited me every week since and guided me in the conduct of my land and property. And 'tis my resolve to remain constant to this shadow as though 'twere flesh and blood and bone. You, my dear Ned, have been pleased to take an interest in me, oh, not without excessive jealousy. And you will be glad when you quit Wasdell Head tomorrow to reflect that the poor widow that has done her best for your comfort and entertainment is not entirely alone. Good night, Mr. Payne.
Betty, Mrs. Desmond, I...
Good night.
Good night.
Hal, I hope thou'rt not angry. 'Twas Mr. Payne that interrupted us, but he may be trusted. Thank heaven he leaves tomorrow.
Now, let me see. What was it I was about to ask you?
Yes, the crooked field by Buck... Why, how dim you are, Harry.
Dim? Egad, but I should think so. Thou knowest that I owe this ghostly existence of mine only to thy love for me. I marvel at your witnessing what has passed between you and Mr. Payne, that thou canst discern me at all.
Witnessing?
Aye. Do you imagine I was out of eye and earshot?
But you disappeared when he burst in.
I faded out, Betty, but I've been with thee the whole while.
Oh, hell.
Nay, lass, no tears. I should be making the fuss. And but, George, I would too, but that thou hast diminished me to such a degree that I am scarce capable of. Ah, Betty. I never suspected you would tell me in this.
No, Henry.
That thou shouldst prove such a smooth-tongued, double-paced hypocrite. Dang it, that beats me. That in such a vast knowledge of wit.
Oh, hush, hell, hush. Were I a hypocrite and merely feigning love for thee, there would be nothing of thee visible, hell, not a vestige.
Sounds. I suppose 'tis possible for a woman to love a live man and yet have a softish feeling for a dead one. But 'tis plain, Betty, that the love for him is uppermost. And so, to preserve a morsel of dignity, 'twould be prudent of me to bid thee goodbye before I fade from thee completely.
Oh, no, Harry, listen. When the grave closed over thee, I did believe that I was done with love forevermore, and that my heart was but a dry and withered plant. Alas, Harry, 'twas then that Ned came to Wasdell Head. The sun was shining in the valley, there was a tremble of spring in the air. And 'twas then that I felt love stir again in my heart. But, my dear, he's going, and 'tis not likely that I shall see him again, or any other of his kind or character. And so you must pardon me this one stumble. And by all that I hold most sacred, hell, I
make
swear...
Make no more promises, Bet. Thou hast perjured thyself enough as it is.
Perjured my... Oh, yes.
Thou dost not perceive that 'tis a sad mistake for a widow in the first flood of her grief to call her husband back from the tomb. What we do in heat, we repent in cold. So 'tis my fault for having answered thy cry. I should have had more brains and would have had, but that I lost some in my accident. So come now, dry thine eyes. I tell thee, I don't blame thee nor bear thee malice. No, nor him. 'Tis the way of the world. Odds, bobs, who's missed in it? Why, I recall losing my dog Pincher when I was a bachelor that died of jaundice. Oh, how I raved about it and stamped up and down the stable where he lay stiff. But a week or two later, I was buying a couple of pups in Gosforth Fair and was in love with them and forgot Pincher. And the following week, I met thee and fell in love with thee and forgot the pups. Well, lass...
Harry, don't leave me, please.
Perhaps 'tis all for the best, though it's been a sore blow to my pride. Egad, as I shall ride out no more, maybe 'twill settle the question of my future abode, one direction or t'other.
Harry!
The gray mare, too. She did but blunder but once in her life. Ah, 'tis rough on her, poor slut, to have had her rest broken for a single slip.
Oh, hell, I can't hold thee. Don't fade from me forever.
It be better, lass, for in the heart ye truly love young Master Ned. See now that ye make him as good a wife as you did for me. Goodbye, Betty. I've got to ride on the mare for the last time. Come, mare.
Wait! I love thee, Hal, my husband. Come back to me. Oh, I see thee fading away. I can scarcely see thee. Hal, I swear I truly love thee.
Come. Get up, mare.
dawn will bring me back. Oh, Harry, thou'st faded away, and I want thee. Hal, come back to me. Oh, he's gone. He's gone.
Betty, what is it? What's happened?
Is she all right, Ned?
What are you staring at, Betty? Tell me, what is it?
He's gone. You've driven him away. I hate you. I hate you. Harry.
Oh, Jack. She's dead. I knew it, Jack. Betty, my dear, let me hold you in my arms. I love you. Oh, Jack, what have I done?
Why, it is only a swoon, Ned. That's all. And look, she must truly love thee, lad. Her arm is reaching out around thy neck, even in her fainting spell. Yes, she must truly love thee.
You have heard Sir Arthur Wing Pinero's The Widow of Wasdale Head, adapted for Author's Playhouse by Alan M. Fishburne and directed by Mr. Norman Felton. Miss Geraldine Kay was heard as Betty, Mr. William Everett as Ned. Others in tonight's Author's Playhouse cast were Mr. Howard Hoffman, Mr. Charles Eggleston, and Mr. Bob Derenforth. Mr. Joseph Galicchio conducted. Next week, same time, same station, Author's Playhouse will bring you Lafcadio O'Hearn's exotic tale of the Far East, The Soul of the Great Bell. Radio, as we know it, is proof of what can be accomplished in a land where free enterprise is a way of life, where great good for many people is preferred to benevolent despotism for the few.